Welcome to the Fantasy Unicorns Podcast, a fantasy basketball podcast with a dynasty focus. Welcome all fantasy fiends to episode 2 of the new Fantasy Unicorns Podcast. Be sure to check out our website, thefantasyunicorns.com, for other content like articles, rankings, and even prospect rankings. We'll be picking things back up more, you know, as the season draws closer. My name's Jay, and I'll be your pilot this evening. And joining me in the cockpit is our fellow host, Tony. What's going on, Tony?
Hey, Jay. I'm good, man. Enjoying being done with Monday, because Mondays are always feel like they're really long. So we are recording this on a Monday, for those of you listening. Yep. Unfortunately, if you're a couple days late, some of the stuff that we're talking about might be perhaps a little outdated, but luckily we're in the off season, so things aren't happening every single day.
Yep, that is a fact, and we have gotten over the hump that is Monday. Not going to say I'm looking forward to Tuesday, but you know we're working our way along. So
it's coming whether we like it or not.
Yeah,
so there you go.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, Kevin and I just started our 30-team auction draft in another league. You know, it began earlier today, and it's been wild, man. You know, there's 30 players being bid on simultaneously because each person has to have a player nominated at all times, and there's an 8-hour clock for each player. So, I mean, it's been crazy. So I'll be keeping an eye on that kind of while we're talking here tonight. Try to keep my focus on the podcast as best as possible, though. one more thing before we get started. After finding out earlier today that your nickname in your local streets is Swoop, I got to know if there's any particular story behind that.
it was a nickname that was given to me back in college. It's just something that's stuck for years now. Since then, it just kind of came from I've got long hair, got swoopy long hair, and people call me that. And I was a smooth talker type guy, so everyone always called me Swoop back in college. And it's a funny little thing that everyone still it's actually permeated now other elements like new friends that I've made who have met my college friends. So it's kind of a weird nickname to stick, but you know, you kind of embrace it and go with it, and it's not a bad one. So
the best, I guess, the only nicknames are the ones you don't give yourself. If you give yourself a nickname, I don't consider it a nickname at all.
And yourself a nickname.
There's much worse nicknames to have. That's right. Yeah. Rule number one. Anyway. All right, cool. I'm ready to get into it here. On the docket this evening, we will be bringing up some players we believe will be potential value picks in drafts based on the Yahoo rankings. Then we'll finish up with a bit more discussion on the 30-team Unicorn Dynasty League that's been going strong for well over a week now, even pulling up on a week and a half now, I think. But first, I'd like to touch on any recent news that's happened since our last pod. With it being the slow season, there's not a ton of news to digest at the moment. But two quick notes to mention that are we don't have to spend any time on at all, really. But Dwight Howard has officially become a Laker. But barring an injury to JaVale McGee or Anthony Davis, I don't really expect Dwight to be fantasy relevant outside of the deepest of leagues. And I'm sure you're in the same boat. And secondly, Caris LeVert just signed his contract extension at 3 years, $52.5 million. That comes out at about $17.5 million per year, if my math checks out, which is not a given. But I don't want to go into too much detail on him, though, because we'll be talking about him a little later in the show. Do you have anything else before we get started with some of our potential value picks?
The only other interesting piece of news to me was it's not really fantasy, but it's basketball news, was Team USA losing to Australia in the week. To me, that was a bit of a – I can't say that it's a surprise. It's going to be a wake-up call. It's probably good for that team to take a loss here when it doesn't count. It's going to say, oh, you know what? We are fallible. But I think a lot of us who've been paying attention know that the team that USA is putting out is not a very strong team. It'll be interesting to sort of see who steps up. I'll be keeping my eye personally on the two young Celtic stars, Jason Tatum Jaylen Brown. I think those two guys have an opportunity to step up and potentially, you know, take a larger role on a team like this. Chris Middleton's great, but, you know, I wonder how much he's going to be on the floor. Jaylen Brown would be the next guy there. And then also looking at how they play with Kemba Walker, I think is going to be really interesting, an interesting dynamic to pay attention to sort of getting into that. And losing to Australia, Australia is a good team. Hardly, not really one of the top teams in the world stage. So it's definitely a wake-up call for them, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And I also agree with watching how Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Kemba Walker all play together. You know, it's nice that they'll have this extra time to kind of gel together before starting with their team in the NBA season. And I'm also keeping an eye on Donovan Mitchell. I know I've heard pretty good things about him so far through this offseason. You know, he's really been working on his game, and I have kind of relatively high hopes for him next season to take that next step.
I do too. And another piece of that Celtics puzzle is Marcus Smart on that roster as well. So
right,
yeah, how he fits in is going to be, he's going to be in there as well. Those four guys, I mean, there's four guys on the Celtics who are going to be playing. And I wonder how that's going to play into, you know, sort of planning out guys like Kemba Walker, how many games he's going to play. Is that going to have an impact? But it probably won't. Anyway, let's not get into it too much, but that's something to keep an eye on moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. I guess we'll start getting into it here. What we're going to jump into now is a topic I'm sure other fantasy voices have touched on already, but just wanted to kind of give our take on it because we might have some varying opinions. What we'll be talking about here is players we think could be potential value picks based on fantasy platform expert rankings, particularly Yahoo rankings, because those tend to be a bit more accurate than others. So we'll be focusing on the Yahoo rankings. But man, some of those ESPN rankings were just laughable. I don't know if you saw them, but there's Yahoo's just a bit more reliable than those ESPN rankings. And if we did a pod to discuss the value picks of the ESPN rankings, it might be a 4-hour podcast. But you know,
a little too easy finding the picks there.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Getting into it here, we tried to stick to somewhat younger options since we are predominantly dynasty driven, but we will undoubtedly have some older vets who were just too juicy to pass on. So we're crashing both the dynasty and the redraft parties today. So Tony, if you want to kick things off, who's your first potential value pick based on Yahoo's non-cat rankings?
Yeah, so again, caveat here is that those rankings are questionable sometimes. So, you know, when we talk about someone, it's reasonable to say add 10 spots potentially for some of these guys to their ADP rank to sort of to say, give yourself a little bit of buffer here and not take it as the end all be all. So diving in, right. my first choice here is Gordon Hayward. He's ranked at 80 right now for Yahoo. A lot of people might be down on him because of the year that he had last year. Obviously didn't feature in the Celtics offense, but as we all know, the Celtics had a lot of issues last year with chemistry, with rotations, a lot of that coming from Kyrie Irving, who's no longer on that roster. I'm looking at Gordon Hayward this year to really step up and take a leading role with Kemba Walker, much more willing to share the ball, be more of a silent leader and defer to Gordon Hayward. I think Gordon Hayward sometimes would be passive. I'm looking to him to regain some of that form that he had when he was in his last season at the Utah Jazz, his all-star season. You know, we forget that Gordon Hayward was a really, really good basketball player. He had a horrific injury, came back mid-year last year on a team that was having chemistry issues. I think that I could really expect him to bounce back big time. And 80 to me seems very low. So Gordon Hayward to me is an obvious choice to have a big bounce back season, especially with the Celtics looking to compete all year long. And some of these guys, as I alluded to earlier, you know, are having active summers after playoffs, for the case of Smart, Tatum, and Brown. So, you know, we'll see how much run Gordon Hayward gets. He might be asked to sort of take on more of a role where some of these guys might rest or sit. That's definitely an opportunity for him.
Yeah, I agree with that pick. You know, Gordon Hayward was a perennial top 50, top 60 guy for years before this injury. You know, his fantasy ranks in non-cat were 32, 54, 38, and then 65 in his, I think, fourth year in the NBA. And he was kind of that do-it-all guy for Utah. You know, he was, like you said, he was the Utah's offense. He was their focal point. And it's nice on this Boston roster that he won't be asked to be the guy anymore, because they have other options, obviously. They have other options on sides of the ball. So that can actually help his value. Just like you were saying, he won't have the pressure on him to be that guy anymore. So I expect him to take that jump. Assuming he stays healthy, I do expect him to take that jump, especially playing alongside Kemba instead of Kyrie. And with Horford gone, maybe Hayward goes to the power forward a little bit more, something like that. So, yeah, I think that's a solid pick.
Yeah, and he's going to give you a lot. He's going to give you the percentages, the points, the three-pointers. So that's four categories he's going to provide. And if they ask him to you know, play at a position like a three or a four, which I don't know how much they're going to play him at the four, but if they do, then potentially he might get an uptick in rebounds. You know, that type of stuff at his position is valuable.
Right. I'm going to pull on my heartstrings for my first pick here for my home team, the New Orleans Pelicans. Yahoo has Favors ranked as the 80th player overall, last time I checked. Now, this just seems kind of wild to me, because Favors was the 75th overall player just last season on a Utah team who didn't play nearly as fast as the Pelicans will play, and also playing only 23 minutes as the backup center behind Gobert and playing power forward. It just seems odd to me to have Favors ranked even lower this season. He'll be the starting center for one of the fastest, if not the fastest team in the league. And he'll obviously play more than 23 minutes per game, probably by a wide margin, considering his backups are Jahlil Okafor and a rookie who was limited by his college coach. And let me bring this up to kind of hammer my point in. In the 2014-15 season, Favors played a little over 30 minutes per game. He was the 42nd overall player in that season. And then to top that off, in the following season, 2015-16, Favors played about 32 minutes per game and finished as the 29th overall fantasy player. And I believe those were on the old snail-paced Utah teams, if I'm not mistaken. You know, Alvin Gentry will play fast. He wants to play fast. He wants to be the fastest team in the league. And I believe they will be, or they'll at least be in the top three, if not the fastest team. You know, I have Derek Favors hanging out around the top 30 in my rankings, and I'm trying to get him everywhere I can. The only concern I'd have about him is staying healthy, especially playing at a pace he's not used to. 3 years ago, he played only 50 games. The year before that, he played 62. So in his two recent seasons, he's played 76 and 77. So hopefully he can remain healthy and be that, you know, dominant force that got him drafted third overall in the 2010 NBA draft.
Yeah, I think Favors is a great choice. Everything that you said about his backup, you're right. Jackson Hayes, a lot of people are drafting him early, and I see it. He's just gushing with potential, but he's not ready to play. He's not going to get a lot of minutes this year. He's probably going to spend some time in the G League. Favors is going to be really the only solid option on the team with Jrue Holiday, with Lonzo Ball, with Brandon Ingram, and Zion Williamson. That team could potentially be playing some important games, and you're not going to rely on you're going to want to rely on Derek Favors in those situations at the five to provide that veteran presence, and he's not really all that old, to your point. So I think that's a great point. He could really outperform that range.
He will be their center. He'll be the guy there, barring any extreme unpredicted Jackson Hayes jump. So
sure,
let's get into your next guy. Who you got next?
Yeah, I'm getting into a bit of a favoritism pick here a little bit. He's on my team in the fantasy unicorns.
Okay. But I think Marvin, I did it for my first pick too, so it's all good.
Oh, right. That's right. Yeah, absolutely. So for me, I'm choosing to focus here on Marvin Bagley. This is bringing us back to our dynasty roots here. Yahoo had him at a laughable, in my opinion, 112. It seems entirely too low for a guy who will be starting this year on a Kings team that's looking to make the playoffs. Obviously, they signed Dwayne Dedmon. So, if they hadn't gone and signed someone like a Dedmon to the money that they had, you would have hoped that potentially Bagley would have taken on a bigger portion of those front court minutes. But Dedmon is a guy who is a veteran. He was great working with younger players like John Collins in Atlanta. I could see Bagley having a similar jump to John Collins from year one to year two. They had similar minutes in their year one, Bagley playing around 25 minutes a game. But, you know, he showed the opportunity, he showed the ability to score at multiple levels on the floor. He's got a nice set of post moves. And Dedmon showed the ability to step outside to the three. So Bagley should have plenty of room to operate in the paint, keep his field goal percentage high. Last year, he shot 50.4% from the field, making him a plus in that category. And he'll have an opportunity to work on his game and really, you know, step outside and show some other things that he has. He's got nice spot up potential. He's got a nice jumper. I'm wondering if he'll show some 3-point range. He didn't really do that much. He only shot half a 3-pointer a game, but you know, that's something that potentially he could, you know, expand in the future. And that's something that I would look for him to do, similar to John Collins. I just think that 112 is entirely too low for a player of his caliber, who's going to get a huge minutes boost this year, playing in his second year with De'Aaron Fox. I mean, they're going to be together a fantastic duo in their second year. I'm really looking forward to what they're going to do. I wasn't super high, if I'm being completely honest, last year as a rookie. I wasn't super high on Bagley. I thought that he could have dropped further in the draft. I had him in my personal draft boards behind Trae Young. But he's proven himself to be, and I think if we did a redraft today, it would probably fall in the same place. But that doesn't mean that Bagley isn't, you know, a really fantastic talent and doesn't have the opportunity this season to put up something like a 21, 22, and 8 or 9 rebound season. I think that at its best, it could be something like that. More reasonable would be, you know, an efficient 18 and 8. You know, that would be great to see. He did that in per 36 numbers this season. He has the opportunity to really step up and take that role. But you know, we'll see if he does it. To me, I think it's worth the gamble.
Yeah, and I think bringing up Dwayne Dedmon in the beginning was a good start to the thought process, because Dedmon's an underrated player. To be honest, I was hoping
he was
the number one target. I was hoping the Pelicans would sign in free agency to play with Zion. You know, just his floor spacing would seem to gel very nicely with Zion's skill set. But anyway, Sacramento picked him up, and it's kind of a bump in the back.
They paid him nicely too.
They did.
He got a good deal from Sacramento.
Absolutely. And it's not great for Bagley, but at this point, I don't know if they prefer playing him at the power forward spot anyway. But bringing up his threes, he didn't shoot a ton of them in college, but he was a decent percentage guy as far as threes go in college. You know, he made, I'm looking it up here, 39.7%. So,
and Luke Walton is going to make them push and shoot threes. It's something that he did when he was in LA. He will ask him to do that. And if he shot good percentages, if he increases his attempts, his points and his numbers are going to go up.
Sure. And, you know, he's one of those odd cases where he had a good 3-point percentage, but his free throw percentage was not great in college.
Right.
You know, that was down to 62.7. So it's kind of a, you know, which one's the real thing here kind of deal. But, you know, I believe he will become maybe not a 3-point sniper, but somewhat reliable from range, you know, maybe even as soon as this coming year. He's certainly been working on it though. And another thing I wanted to touch on was he actually had more blocks in his rookie season in the NBA than he did in college last season. It's kind of crazy. I think it was 0.9 blocks per game in college, and then he averaged the one in only 25 minutes per game as a rookie. So I thought that really helped his value. You know, like you were talking about, people were kind of down on him to begin before the season. And averaged that one block. He wasn't known as a shot blocker, and you know, one block per game isn't anything to write home about. But it is a little more than I expected him to get in the
more pros. Than you expect. Yeah, and that's a win if it's more than you expect.
Absolutely. So I guess I'll move on to my next guy here. You know, people who have read my articles or followed me on Twitter won't be surprised by my next pick here. Before last season, there were a few players who I called my guys. You know, players I believed would be decent fantasy players eventually, more of a dynasty pick though, because they would be more of a stash for a year or two while they work their way up. Caris LeVert, was on that list and was one of the my proudest guys for at least for the start of the season. Broke out sooner than I expected. We'll bring him up again in a few minutes. The jury's still out on Aaron Holiday, was another guy on that list. But the guy I want to bring up here for my next value pick is Zach Collins. He served his time in Portland, their young players' prison, because of how they like to kind of bring their young players along slowly and fade away from relying on them heavily early on in their career, which, you know, I don't hate it. You know, it kind of sets them up for success a bit more. We saw that with Anthony Simons last season. We saw it with C.J. McCollum, and I believe we'll also see it with Nasir Little. But Zach Collins has served his time. You know, 15 minutes per game his rookie season, 17 minutes per game last season. But now it's his time to shine. The new depth chart in Portland needs a reliable front court player, and I believe he'll break out a bit. Last season, the Blazers only finished with four players, I believe, who had a positive defensive box plus-minus. Only four. Those players were Nurkic, Aminu, Harkless, and Zach Collins. And if you'll notice, those players are gone now, except Nurkic and Collins. Obviously, Nurkic will miss most of the season as well. So now they added Whiteside, who should be a positive defensively, especially in Terry Stotts' extreme drop-back center style. But I think Zach Collins should have ample opportunity to find success on this new roster, especially considering the competition at power forward is who? Mario Hezonja and, you know, Anthony Tolliver. Maybe they try Pau Gasol at power forward for some limited minutes. Gasol is bound to get a few rotation minutes, at least early in the season after signing with them, but I don't see him playing big minutes at this point in his career. I mean, what is he, 39 now?
Yeah, he's not putting in real minutes at this point, right? I don't see him starting, really.
Right, exactly. And Collins is going to be the best option at power forward and even backup center until Nurkic gets healthy. You know, as with most bigger guys, Collins would be more valuable at center, but we take what we can get, and he should be a reliable source of threes and blocks, and he's a guy who won't kill your free throw percentage, which is always a plus. I currently have him in actually my top 90 in my redraft rankings, and at just 21 years of age, he's a good dynasty pick to boot.
Definitely. I think Zach Collins has the opportunity this season more than he's ever had in his career. And I also feel like he's ready to take that step. I think that we've seen him step up in big moments. I think he's looking to do that this season. He could break out, like you said. It's a great pick.
We can go ahead and move on to your next guy now if you want.
Yeah, sure. So next up is another dynasty-focused pick. He flies under everyone's radar because he's not that well-known. Even when he was drafted, most people were saying, who? But right now he's ranked at 157. I'm talking about OG Anunoby. Toronto, obviously, huge shakeup going on there, but they know what they like in that organization. They like guys who are athletic freaks, can get up and down the floor. They like guys who have upside. They tend to go young, and they enjoy. They look for players who have the opportunity to learn multiple skills. They did it with Pascal Siakam, and OG Anunoby, I think, is next on that list. They went out and they got Stanley Johnson, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. That depth chart is a little stuffed up. But at 157, I think OG Anunoby is a great flyer to take in deep leagues. I think he has the opportunity this season to show his skill. He has the ability to shoot. He has the ability to ball handle. He can get to the rim. He can defend. He does everything on the floor. I think his ability to defend is what's going to keep him on the floor, potentially over a Stanley Johnson or a Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. But I also wonder what, you know, is he really going to be given that opportunity this season? I think he will. I think Toronto is going to look high and low for opportunities to find value this season, having lost Kawhi Leonard. So those opportunities there are, you know, those are the types of things that I look at when I'm looking at value picks. I'm saying who is going to have an opportunity to get some minutes. And I think that OG is one of those guys.
I love this pick. I absolutely love this pick. He's one of my guys that I have as a very late round breakout sleeper type, someone sure. Who I'm targeting that I feel like I can get in the very later rounds. And I think Toronto loves him. And he, more than any of their other younger players, can step into, obviously nobody can step into Kawhi Leonard's role, but he would come the closest out of all their wings, in my opinion. And sure. he has so much fantasy potential about him. He has such a good fantasy palette. So many, the hustle stats and that shot. And I just love this pick. And I believe under Nick Nurse, he can certainly succeed. Hopefully he just stays healthy is the only issue with that.
Right.
And he's just never been able to find consistency in Toronto with, you know, them becoming title contenders and him suffering the injuries. And so I'm rooting for him, and I think he can do it.
I think he can too. I mean, he's only 22 years old. He has the opportunity to get to a 1-1-1 slash line with as an elite 3-and-D guy. If you're a dynasty guy if you're a dynasty fantasy player who's looking for, you know, some deep round value, OG is a great pick. And for reference, in our Fantasy Unicorns 30-teamer, he went 97 in the draft, which translates to something like 120, which is again 30 spots above. Well, 120 to 130, it's 20 to 30 spots above the Yahoo ranking. So definitely the value is there. He was picked over guys like Enes Kanter, Anthony Simons, who you mentioned earlier. He was picked over Landry Shamet. And Anobi has an opportunity this season to break out, and he's getting picked over guys who have already had their breakouts.
So I'll move on to my next guy now, who is going to be Caris LeVert. This one's probably the most egregious misranking of all the ones on my short list here. I can kind of understand the reasoning behind dropping him in the rankings, but not to 158. In my previous pick, I mentioned how the new league and Caris LeVert was one of my guys before last season and before his injury. Before that injury, he outperformed even my expectations, and I had been a LeVert fan for a while. If you remember, I believe LeVert got injured in his 13th game last season, and then he came back.
Yeah,
and in the 14th early. Game, the 14th game is when he had that big injury, actually. So, but in the 12 games before that 13th game, LeVert was the 52nd overall fantasy player, and it didn't seem fluky, you know. And in a punt free throw percentage build in that time span, LeVert was the 46th best player. But luckily, I don't think his free throw percentage is so bad that it must be punted. His value just gets a bump if you do. I just really hope his explosiveness and hustle isn't severely affected by that injury. But I think people who have some concerns about Brooklyn's new depth chart, I don't think that's too worrisome, especially in the short term while Durant's missing significant time. Like, LeVert should be the second option after Kyrie this year, in my opinion. The usage doesn't concern me so much either. Actually, listen to this wild fact I stumbled upon while researching some numbers. D'Angelo Russell has had a higher usage rate in his last two seasons than Kyrie has had in any season in his entire career.
Wow.
Yeah, D'Lo had 31.9 last year and 31.8 the year before. Kyrie has never exceeded 31, so 31 even. So obviously that has a lot to do with playing with LeBron and other, you know, bigger names. But
superstars, right?
Right. I just thought that was kind of crazy. Now, I do expect Kyrie to have maybe a career usage rate this year on this Brooklyn squad while Durant's out. But I don't think it's something to worry about too much, is all I guess what I'm trying to get across here. So, plus the pace that Kenny Atkinson likes to play at should hopefully support multiple top options even after Durant returns. You know, there's certainly some injury concerns with LeVert. Hopefully he can return to the level of play, you know, that he displayed early last season, though. You know, if he can come close to that, he'll easily surpass this ranking. All right, who you got next?
The next guy on my list, the last guy on my list right now that we're going to go in depth on is someone that a lot of guys hate on. He gets a lot of, in my opinion, misdirected hate just because, you know, maybe his play style isn't what people like in the modern NBA. But Zach LaVine is being listed at Yahoo at 97, which to me is just way, way too low for a guy who's going to start on a team that's not very good. And this is one of those classic situations where people are letting their opinion of his real life game cloud their judgment for his fantasy game. Zach LaVine's fantasy game is as good as they come. And he provided last year 50 to all fringe top 50 value in your standard leagues. He provides top flight scoring, really great 3-point numbers, great free throw shooting numbers. He gives you assists, he gets steals. And you think, when you think of Zach LaVine's game, you're thinking to yourself, well, he's going to tank my field goal percentage, but he actually really doesn't do that for his position. Last year, he shot just under 47%. To me, that isn't really, when you look at the numbers and you dive into it a little bit, he played 34 minutes a game, and maybe that comes down a little bit now with Coby White handling the ball a little bit more. But to me, that means that Zach LaVine is going to have the opportunity to play off ball. Means that those turnovers are going to come down a little bit, because obviously that's a huge part of his game. He turned the ball over a ton last year. But, you know, as the Bulls get a little bit better, and now with Lauri Markkanen coming back, with Wendell Carter, who is a talented handler of the ball and a talented passer, similar to Al Horford, they have multiple different people now who can hold onto the ball and can play make. So they won't rely on Zach LaVine to do that as much. He can focus on getting to the rim at an elite level, which he already does, shooting the ball at a near elite level, which he already does, and, you know, continuing to distribute the ball and play, you know, plus defense. He gets, from a fantasy perspective, he gets steals. I know that the advanced metrics, they aren't great for him, but he gets steals, he gets in the passing lanes, and then he runs out and he gets in the open court. The Bulls are going to play like that. So to me, I think that a lot of guys might be down on him. A lot of people might be looking at him and saying, you know, guy, I don't like his game. And now with Coby White coming in and potential changes in the future, how does that change things? To me, I think Zach LaVine is still a great pick. And if he drops to 90 overall, that's too late for me. And that's corroborated by his draft position. In our draft, he went 28th in our full draft, which corresponds with our franchise draft being 30. Corresponds to something around 60, which is more in keeping with where he performed last year. I don't see a reason why he should be dropped 30 positions, 30 spots from that in the Yahoo rankings. Obviously, Dynasty, he goes up. But still, you know, Dynasty or not, he's giving you great value. And, you know, this season he could give more.
Yeah, I agree. And we were talking before we started here. And I just think it's a great point to bring up that, you know, he kind of has that negative stigma about him because of, you know, some of the real life stuff that kind of gets in the way of how you should perceive him as a fantasy asset. And he's a good fantasy player for sure. I feel like he has that kind of Enes Kanter negative connotation about him, where, you know, the real life issues, they won't really affect the fantasy performance very much, and it shouldn't cloud your judgment, like you were saying.
It's the Carmelo, right?
I know you brought up Coby White as well, and I don't know if he alone is the concern here, but maybe the combination of him and the rest of the guards they brought in. I know, you know, Tomas Satoransky should certainly get some run as well, significant run hopefully. But you know, he's going to be the point guard. LaVine can be predominantly the two here, which Coby White can kind of play both spots. But if Chicago wants to compete, I don't think they'll play Coby White enough, or I don't think they'll give him a significant role at least. So I do like your Zach LaVine pick here as well. My last guy, this Yahoo ranking isn't extremely egregious. There does exist a scenario where he doesn't crack the top 120, but I do tend to believe Maxi Kleber will do just that. After finishing last season as the 156th overall fantasy asset, I think Kleber is in store for a nice jump. A bit of an advanced analytics darling, Kleber finished tied for 9th in blocks percentage out of the whole NBA. He was tied with Joel Embiid and Andre Drummond. You just didn't notice it by looking at his blocks per game numbers, because he averaged only 20 minutes per game. According to Jacob Goldstein's B-Ball Index, which, by the way, is a fantastic and fun tool for analytics nerds like myself for just like $5 a month. But anyway, Kleber grades out as an A in interior defense, so he can play center and protect the paint. He also grades out as an A in off-ball movement, an A- in finishing, a B+ in post play, and roll gravity and an A- in offensive rebounding. He just seems like one of those Rick Carlisle diamonds in the rough. And on top of all that, he can space the floor some too. To me, there'll be a tight three-man front court rotation between he and Porzingis and Dwight Powell. All three of these gentlemen are versatile enough to play the four or the five. We might get some Boban mixed in at center every now and then, but for the most part, I expect these guys to be the primary options up front. Powell might have big center minutes locked up, basically, with Porzingis starting a power forward. But coming off the bench, Kleba can back up both of these guys. But to put the cherry on top, we all know Porzingis should be limited in some form or fashion. So he probably won't get big 30-plus minutes consistently. And in the games that Porzingis misses completely, I think Kleba is the man who steps up and plays that Porzingis-light role. Because he's versatile and he's just playing good enough to fill a large portion of that hole. As for standard 12-team leagues go, Kleber will probably be closer to one of the end-of-roster spots, but still good enough that he should certainly be rostered, especially in those games that Porzingis misses, because he'll get more than 21 minutes per game that he got last year, and he'll give you those blocks, and he'll give you those threes and free throw percentage, while also helping your turnovers and rebound stats and not hurting you in field goal percentage. So I currently have him ranked at 104 in my rankings for this coming season. Yahoo has him at 145 at the moment. So yeah, I have him obviously, 41 spots higher. And if Porzingis has to miss any extended periods of time, he'll skyrocket even higher for me.
Yeah, interesting. I think Kleber, he wasn't someone who's on my radar personally. I think Kleba has the opportunity, like you said. I do wonder how that rotation works, especially if Dallas tries to compete right away. Are they willing to give him a few of those backup minutes and work, allow him to work through it a little bit more? Just in the time that I've seen him, sometimes he gets a little lost out there on rotations. Well, he is a talented shot blocker, but you know, you wonder, are the rotations really going to be all that crisp? Are they going to allow him to work through that when a guy like Dwight Powell is so refined in the pick and roll and has so much talent on defense?
Well, I do believe Powell will be that starting center and has most of those minutes locked down, you know, with Porzingis there as well. But Kleba, this will be his third season in the NBA, I believe.
Right.
But he's already 27, so he's not like a super young guy. He has the experience from elsewhere. So, you know, he's been getting used to the league more and more, and I think this is the season he really puts it all together. So
that sounds great. My guy. Sometimes anyway, that can be a sign of future success. You know, it definitely, more often than not. So it's a good pick.
So we'll get into some quick hitter honorable mention types if you have any.
Yeah, for me, a couple guys that just stood out were Cody Zeller at 130. I think with Charlotte rebuilding and being probably one of the worst teams this year, they're going to let Zeller work on his game a lot. He's got a lot of things to like. And at 130 in the Yahoo rankings, he definitely should be going higher. He's really not that old either. Aminu at 144. I think he has the opportunity this season as a starter in Orlando. They're pushing for a playoff spot. So, you know, Aminu's definitely going to have an opportunity to step up and really perform there. And finally, Blake Griffin at 93. People are going to underdraft Blake Griffin because of his injury concerns and perceived age and potential issues in Detroit. But in my opinion, I think that he has an opportunity because they really didn't make that many changes this year. And as a result of that, he's going to want to prove something. Last year, they had a really tough season. He was injured. They obviously got swept by the Bucks in the playoffs, and it was really a shame for them. But really, he has an opportunity here to step up. I think he really wants to. And to me, 93 is too low. To me, he still has the opportunity to be a top 60, top 50 even player if he's healthy. And it's still Blake Griffin. You know, he's 30 years old. He has a lot to prove yet still in his career. And I think that the Pistons this season, they might make a few trades. They might be active. He really could get some help, and in which case his performance would improve drastically. And I think that, I understand why people are low on him, but at 93, if he's dropping to the low 80s, high 90s, I think there's definitely no reason why you shouldn't be taking Blake Griffin. He's a talented player. He does so much on the floor. He gives you so much. He has the opportunity to be a triple-double guy, and he can give you threes as well. He does it all on the floor. I don't see why you wouldn't go for Blake Griffin in the 60s or the 70s.
I agree with your picks here. I'm not going to get into them too much here, just because I'm trying to keep this pod a little shorter than it's looking like it might run now.
We can talk all day.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Let's see. I'll just throw mine out here real quick then. JaVale McGee is a player we've talked about last week on this pod as well. You know, Yahoo has him ranked at 139 at the moment, but after the Boogie injury and even considering the Lakers brought in Dwight Howard, I still think JaVale should be good enough for at least top 100 value, especially when you consider he was the 52nd overall player last season in only about 22 minutes per game. So I expect him to get at least that same amount of play time, if not more. Another honorable mention is Lonzo Ball for me, ranked at 129. Without the pressure of the win now LeBron, Lonzo could find a little bit more success. I expect him to be a top 100 guy, and if he gets closer to the free throw percentage he had in college, he'll be much better than even that. And lastly, I had Anthony Simons here, who is ranked at 298. So if you expect him to be a piece of Portland's primary guard rotation at all, like I do, that's an absolute steal if you get him that late. Now, in dynasty leagues, you obviously won't, because he's been a hot topic to talk about lately, so he's kind of fresh on everybody's minds. But I feel like that rank was way too low as well. Well, those were our potential draft value picks based on Yahoo leagues. I think we certainly had some good ones and shed a little bit of light on guys we think can take that next step in fantasy ranks this coming season. And speaking of taking that next step, we've been trucking right along in our 30-team Unicorn League Dynasty Draft. So after this ad, let's take a look at that.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Fantasy Unicorns podcast. Before we dive in here with some analysis and takeaways from our 30-team draft, if any of you want to take it to Twitter, get all up in our mentions and yell at us for any of our picks or say that we missed someone, feel free to do so. Follow us on Twitter. We love a good old-fashioned Twitter bout over some basketball opinions. Follow me at @who's_your_papa on Twitter. And Jay, why don't you let the people know your handle as well, where they can reach you.
Yep, mine is just @fantasyNBALayup. Yeah, like Tony said, if y'all have any quarrels or you liked our picks, either way, you know, hit us up, follow us, you know, at us, however you say this.
At us. Right.
So I guess we get into talking about the Unicorn League now, if you're ready.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So I think on last week's episode, we were just a couple rounds in. If you want to hear more about this league and the unique rules we had set in place, you can go back and listen to episode one. Trust me, there's a reason Miles Bridges and Kevin Love went in round one. So I love the rules we established, and I think this has been one of the best ways to do a 30-team dynasty that I've ever been a part of. But we are now seven rounds in, I believe. So how's your team looking at this point, Tony? It looks like you're going the young and fun rebuilding route.
Oh, yeah, I'm rebuilding big time. I don't think that we've actually made that many picks since I haven't made many picks since last week because I moved up a lot. I had four picks in the fourth round, and I haven't had another pick since then. I have one coming up in the seventh, and I'm really, really excited for it.
It's a bold really strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off.
Yeah, with rebuilding, my strategy is that most of the end of your bench guys, you're going to trade or potentially even drop because you're going to be getting draft picks or, you know, things like that. So for me, those are guys that I'm taking flyers on, high upside guys. I might potentially try to move up here. Jay, you and I are jousting for similar positioning here in the seventh round. So
it seems like.
Yeah, we're doing some group me elbowing here, some boxing out. But it's definitely been really interesting for me. My latest pick was Sekou Doumbouya. I took him in at the end of the fourth round. which sort of translates to the end of the fifth round if you include our franchise draft. Sekou to me is maybe a little bit of a reach at 119 overall. It really translates more to 150 overall, but to me that seems about right for him. He's someone who in a dynasty setting isn't really going to come up for the next couple of years. Probably going to spend some time in the G League, but he has so much upside. He has the opportunity to be one of those triple one players that we were talking about. He can defend 1-4. He has ball handling ability. He has shooting ability. He's got a nice stroke from outside. Can get to the rim. And I really think that he has the opportunity to kind of be a Paul George at best type of a player. You know, if he really develops, he has a silky game. He's really athletic. He can get steals. He can block shots. He can do it all on the floor. I like him a lot. But outside of that, I really haven't had any picks. So I can't really speak too much as to what's been going on for my strategy. But there have been a lot of interesting picks in the last few rounds.
For sure. And literally, just as you were talking here, a guy that I had at the top of my queue was chosen. So kind of salty about that, but we will move on anyway. yeah, you have some nice high-risk, high-reward kind of young guns like Doumbouya, like you mentioned. Sekou might take some time, but I have relatively high hopes for him, like you seem to as well. And Mo Bamba also fits in that kind of high-risk, high-reward category.
Yeah, the way that I see it is my team isn't going to compete for the next 3 years, right? Like Thomas Bryant, even Bagley, you know, those guys are going to take a couple years for them to develop into anything, you know, near all-star level, which is what you're hoping for when, you know, when you draft a team like this, you're hoping two or three of these guys become all-stars and then you're contending. And that's kind of the strategy that I'm going with.
Right. And that's typically the route I choose to take in startup dynasties. But when I was able to trade for one of my favorite players, Drew Holiday, I actually bit down and opted to go a different direction this time. So my roster is actually way different than it was in last week's episode. Although none of my guys are quite over the age of 30 yet, I am in a win now mode with Drew and Derek Favors and Robert Covington. Three guys I believe can crack the top 35, especially Drew, who I actually have ranked as a first round value in my rankings at the moment at number 12. And to complement those three guys, I picked up some players I think can make a bigger splash this season than they did last season, like DeLon Wright, Dwight Powell, Nick Batum, and Davis Bertans. So far, those are the guys I've picked up, and I'm hoping to get one of these two guys in my queue. I'm waiting. Let's see. I don't even know how much longer I have to my pick. Oh, it's not too bad. You know, 10 picks, something like that, to my next pick. Hopefully, one of these two at the top of my queue falls to me, unlike KCP did, because I needed a few more threes here. But anyway.
KCP. I played against him in high school.
Did you? How was
that?
Yeah, I
did. He was good. He was good. He was really good. He was one of the best.
An NBA player was good? Man.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, obviously, right? He played against me. He was at Green Forest Christian High School in Atlanta. And I was, you know, he was one of the best shooters I ever played against.
I can imagine.
Just the extension that he would get on his jump shot was like nothing I'd ever seen before. But yeah, he's he's an okay NBA player now, but obviously one of the best high school players that I ever played.
Oh, for sure. As NBA players tend to do, you know, when they're playing in high school, or when you see, you know, just an average or below average NBA player playing in a park against, you know, random Joe Blows. NBA player, your average NBA player would look like a friggin' superstar on the court.
Right.
Regular people like me.
Exactly.
But,
yeah.
I did also draft Grant Williams. There was a run of rookies that were being taken, and I just couldn't help myself. I started fiending. I was biting my fingernails. I was scratching my neck like the youth addict that I am, and I just got overwhelmed by my feelings and ended up moving up to grab Grant Williams, one of my favorite rookies to draft this year, actually. So shout out to Ty for trading with me so I could move up to grab him, because that was actually the player he was going to draft with his pick. He actually told me that before I made my pick, that he was going to take Grant Williams. So that was definitely worth moving up to take him. You know, this is uncharted territory for me, at least over the last couple of years, because I'm always doing that fun young rebuilding thing in Dynasty Leagues. But, you know, I've been looking over other teams in this league, and there are some pretty good builds, as well as some that I find kind of interesting for one reason or another. So let's go over some rosters in this league that have piqued our interest for one reason or another. Last week, we briefly mentioned a few teams who seem to be in win-now mode, like Peter's OKC Thunder team with a well-put-together core of Westbrook, LeBron, and Draymond, who complement each other well. We also brought up Mr. Terry's Rockets, aiming for a ring with potential top 50 guys like Harden, Aldridge, Terry Rozier, and as well as Eli's Miami Heat roster, built with several potential top 100 players like Jimmy Butler, Kawhi, Brogdon, Deadman, Larry Nance, Jeremy Lamb, and Luke Kennard. That's a scary roster, man. I'm not going to lie. And one more team I'll throw out there for that win now criteria is Bilal's Utah Jazz team. He took Gobert in the first round, which surprised a few of us, but I don't hate the decision to go with Gobert over Donovan. I know we touched on that last week, but Gobert was the sure thing where you know what you're kind of getting with him. Plus, blocks are one of those fantasy categories that are top-heavy. If you don't get one of those top shot blockers, it becomes exponentially more difficult to win that stat consistently. Then he hit us with the Eric Bledsoe, Jeff Teague, 1-2 punch, and to top it off, he mixed in a little DJ, Marc Gasol, and Jeremy Grant, and Kelly Oubre, who I think can be a very good value this season. So Bilal will probably do a little bit of damage this year as well. So I have a few more to touch on as well, but I'll pass the rock to you first, Tony, to hear some of your thoughts. You got any thoughts on the rosters I mentioned and any teams of note of your own in particular?
Sure, yeah. So the way that I think that we're looking at contending teams now, I have a few similar ones as you. I definitely picked Miami and Utah. Eli and Bilal, as you said, both of those guys have built solid teams here. I particularly am a fan of Utah. I think that he's really got a nice build here. I like Jeremy Grant in particular. I think he's going to have a huge year. And I think Jeff Teague was decent value for where he got him. I think he has the opportunity, to put up consistent stats. A lot of people don't like him, but as your backup, you know, your second guard, your second guy is going to get you assists. He's going to get you some points. He's going to get you the odd three. And that's great, you know. So he's got a good build. I like his team a lot. Miami's solid as well. The other teams that I've focused on are Minnesota, Kev's Minnesota. Obviously, he's built a really good team. He's got, some of the preseason rankings have him all over the place, but I really enjoy his build with Lonzo, Karl-Anthony Towns, Bruno Fernando. Obviously Bruno Fernando is not to the level of those other guys, but that's a really solid pick in my opinion. Gallinari is also a good value pick. People might be low on him, but in OKC, he's actually probably going to get an opportunity to score a lot.
He was a good pick where he got him too, because I'm in the same boat as you. You know, somebody's got to score points on this OKC roster, and I think
right.
Gallinari should be the first scoring option there.
Right. And Bazemore also that he has on his team is someone who I think when the going gets tough in Portland and they can't really rely on Simons or Little or Hood, those younger guys to give them those minutes, Bazemore is going to be relied on for that. And he's he was a good fantasy player last year, and he's got JaVale McGee. He took the advice from our pod, and he took JaVale McGee, who, as we said earlier, is good value. So I think Kev's got an opportunity to do some really good things. Another team that I've circled here is the Brooklyn Nets. Can't remember right now who it is that runs that team, but they've got Kyrie, Jamal Murray, who I think Jamal Murray is going to have a great year. And he's young too. He's got Cauley-Stein, who I think is an upside pick. You know, his ceiling isn't too high, but he's going to have a lot of opportunities in Golden State. I think he's about as good as Kevon Looney. I think they'll split time there in a kind of a platoon situation. He's also got Dario Saric. He's got Paul Millsap. Paul Millsap, I think, is a great pick. And Chris Paul, he's definitely in win-now mode. He's got some young guys, Murray, Saric, Cauley-Stein. He's also got Whiteside in there, who I think is up for a potential renaissance in Portland. I like his build. I think he's got a solid team. I think he's going to be in contention. And then finally, Cleveland, I think Jesse, who's part of our Fantasy Unicorns team, I like his squad. Ben Simmons was a good pick as the first pick in the draft after our franchise draft. He went with Al Horford, who's a great fantasy pick. He gives you so much. Kevin Love, who is a sleeper, in my opinion, this season. J.J. Redick, who gives you solid stats. And Rodney Hood, those guys are going to give you elite three-pointers. And he got DeAndre Hunter, who's an upside. He's a guy who's going to contribute on a contending team in a fantasy because he's going to contribute right away. And he's young, so he's covering his bets with his older squad here. I like his build a lot. I think he's got a good good squad.
I definitely agree with that. And just as you were talking again, the next guy from the top of my queue was stolen here. So I might be attempting to move up in our draft in the middle of our podcast we're recording here. But I think we'll make it.
Live trade deals. Let's do it.
So another league mate who's obviously playing to win but still has at least one good young piece is our resident young blood Jamie, who's donning the Orlando Magic pinstripes in our league. Jamie's team has Vooch, Markkanen, potential for a punt block setup if he chooses to go that route, and he's added to them Conley, Rubio, and Harrison Barnes, so he's doing a fine job. And then I have a couple other quick hitters for one reason or another here. A guy who has followed and supported the Unicorns basically since we started and has become a friend, our Aussie Kevin P, running the Memphis Grizzlies of our league. He definitely likes the young players, maybe just as much as I do. He put together a promising squad for the future with SGA, his cousin Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Jaren Jackson Jr., Mikal Bridges, Zaire Smith, and my guy Aaron Holiday. So I really appreciate what he's done there. I believe all of those players should have great futures. The jury's still out on Zaire and Aaron Holiday, like I mentioned earlier, but I think they'll become good assets as well. I'll live vicariously through him and his young roster while I attempt to win now. In addition to Kevin, one of our fellow fantasy analysts and fellow prospect watcher, Craig Bozich from Razzball, has built an interesting team that should probably become competitive relatively soon, but is also young enough that he has a great future as well. He's got Donovan Mitchell, who he snagged at the start of the second round, as well as CJ McCollum, Caris LeVert, Miles Bridges, Will Barton, and Cam Reddish. So I like what he's done there as well. Got anything else, Swoop? Man, that's kind of a tough thing to say. Sentence, huh? Swoop. I think it's the SW that gets me.
Oh man, that is weird to hear you say that. But I what I did was I split things up. I went at it from three different directions. I had the contending teams, which I already talked about, and then I had rebuilding teams and interesting quote unquote interesting teams.
Yeah.
One of those interesting teams is Craig's Charlotte team, who you also described as interesting. So I'll take that as a good sign. I do think it's really interesting what he's done because he's focused on having the difference between, age and production. He's been able to bridge that gap, which I think is a difficult thing to maneuver, but he's been able to do it well. I do wonder if this team is really going to be able to compete if some of those guys don't step up, like Miles Bridges. If McCollum maybe takes a step back, which I don't think he will, but if he does, Barton, I think there are some question marks there. And LeVert, I agree, LeVert's great, but some of the issues that we described earlier, maybe some of those things, if some of those things come to be, then, we're talking about a potential mediocrity situation, which, as we know, in Dynasty is a dreaded place to be, where you don't get a great draft pick, but you're not in the playoffs. I think he should be able to do it, but there are some question marks there, which is why he falls into interesting as opposed to contention. But, a couple things go his way. I definitely could see him going up into that contention place. To round out, I also had Kevin's Grizzlies team in my rebuilding setup as well. I think he's one of the strongest rebuilding rosters that you have available out of here. The Shai Gilgeous, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, combo that you mentioned is, I love it. He drafted Jaren Jackson Jr. It was a bit of a reach, in my opinion, where he did in the franchise, but you get your guy. I know some people like it. I think that he could have been there a few later, you know, a few picks later. But you get your guy, especially with the way the franchise draft was set up. You know, sometimes you don't know if a guy's going to be there and you go with your gut. I really love his Tony Bradley pick that he had recently. It's the only setter on his roster, but I actually have Tony Bradley in another league. I picked him with the last pick in a 30-team fantasy draft, similar to this one.
Man.
My last pick was Tony Bradley, and right now I've kept him on my roster in the ML spot. And now it bears fruit finally, and I'd love to see it there, to see him go so early. I think it's a great pick. I think he's got a great rebuilding squad. Some others that I have picked out as great rebuilders is at the Atlanta Hawks in this league. If you don't remember the name of the gentleman who runs that team, but
I think it's Brian.
With Atlanta. I love Atlanta. I'm an Atlanta Hawks fan, IRL. But he's also got a couple of Hawks players that I love, Trae Young and Kevin Huerter. Kevin Huerter, I think, is going to have a breakout year this year. He's going to be given the opportunity to do that. He's going to start. I think his upside is huge. I think he can be kind of a Klay Thompson type of a player. He's a great defender, can shoot, great efficiency, and he can handle the ball as well. RJ Barrett, Julius Randle, you know, those guys I think are talented. He's got a nice little rebuilding squad, and I think he can do some interesting things moving forward. Some other teams that I have, New Orleans, that's Noel. He has a really interesting team. He's made some deals that I found to be interesting. He's got – what I find the most interesting about this team is that he's picked players who are injured. He's bet on players who are injured. We're dealing with injuries.
He'll have something here, you know, next season, assuming all these players get back healthy again. But go ahead.
He could really boost into contention next year with Klay Thompson coming back, Oladipo coming back, and then Zion Williamson in his second year, Okeke in his second year, and Michael Porter Jr.
Right, exactly. Michael Porter Jr. in that next year, and Chuma Okeke is injured this year as well, so he'll take some time to get back as well. So I kind of like what he's done here.
It's a fun squad, and it's a boom or bust play, but I like it.
And you know, another benefit of doing this is that he could potentially have a very early round pick in our rookie draft next year with all these injured guys.
That's right. And as we all know, it's a very top heavy draft next year. So I'm going to be gunning for one of those top three picks. So we'll see. But another team that I'm interested in is Denver. That the build here is Garland, Rodions Kurucs. He's got Jokic, Otto Porter Jr., Mo Harkless, and one of my favorite guys, Derek White, as well as Josh Okogie. That team to me is really interesting. I just love the upside there with Garland and Okogie, Kurucs. Obviously, Jokic gives you a lot, and Otto Porter Jr. is solid, so he should be a pretty decent team. And with a couple deals, I could see Denver actually coming into contention. I haven't seen many Jokic teams in these 30 team leagues go the rebuilding route. So I'm curious to see how that plays out. And then finally, I'm looking at the Boston Celtics as a good rebuilding team. Carson Edwards, Jonathan Isaac, Bam Adebayo, Jason Tatum, Culver, Lonnie Walker, Landry Shamet, a lot of good players. Some question marks. I personally am not huge on Lonnie Walker IV. I think at best, he could kind of be a defensive specialist who can slash. I don't know if his jump shot is as real as people say it is. He obviously showed out in summer league, but I just don't know if he's really going to fit. I'm curious to see how that plays out. But Bam Adebayo is going to have a huge year. I like Jarrett Culver's upside, and I think Jonathan Isaac is a good pick for a team who's rebuilding. Some other interesting teams just to call out. Portland, I think, is really cool. Kostas, my Greek brother, he chose the route of going with a central team here, but he's got Damian Lillard, he's got Cody Zeller, Clint Capella. Those guys should make him a pretty solid team. Marcus Smart, TJ Warren. But then he's got some guys who should be able to contribute but are young. Bobby Portis, Torian Prince, and Nerlens Noel. I think those guys are pretty solid. Some other interesting teams, Dallas and San Antonio. San Antonio is another one of those teams that's all upside. He's got Blake Griffin, Markelle Fultz, Jaxson Hayes, DeAndre Ayton, and DeMar DeRozan. I think that team is really interesting. I'm curious to see if he jumps for a playoff spot or if he maybe goes into a rebuild a little later. And then, as I mentioned, Dallas. I think Dallas might, you know, they've got Doncic. He's got Doncic. But Nurkic, Durant is another injury team, and they've got your Zach Collins, who you love. So, you know, some interesting teams here who I'm curious to keep an eye on moving forward in the draft.
I like that you brought up that some of these teams are, you know, half their roster seems like to be win now, and half of them can contribute to that winning cause, but are also young enough to maintain a bright future. Because that's a strategy I tend to use in a lot of my startup dynasty leagues. Either I'll draft a bunch of players who are between the ages of 24 and 28 and can contribute now, or I'll go that route and get a lot of veterans who will obviously contribute to winning, and some specific younger guys who the situation that they're in will benefit you in the win now mode as well. But I don't want to spend too much more time discussing our personal league, but just a couple more teams I wanted to hit on real quick. Matt is a guy you brought up. He runs the Denver Nuggets of our league, and I was curious to see what he'd do in our draft, because I'm actually in a few leagues with him, and I tend to respect the decisions he makes. Matt and I first crossed paths in one of Jonas Nader's leagues from Roto-World. Shout out to Jonas, by the way. I doubt he's listening, but he recently had a baby boy, Leo. So I know his time is short. He was originally supposed to be in this league, but I'm sure with the baby kind of locked him down. But he's a good follow on Twitter, at Jonas Nader. And if there's a dropout next season, I think he wants in, from what I've heard. But I digress. Matt built a pretty interesting squad around Jokic. Like you said, I think he was in your interesting category, right?
Yeah, he was.
He got Otto Porter was a nice pick at where he got him close to the end of the second round, I think. I don't need to get into it too much since you touched on it, but he ended up sniping Derek White from me around pick 86, which was a good pick, but I unfortunately had to add Matt to my list of guys I must get revenge on. So, so speaking of that list, the man sitting at the top right now is Rohan, who manages the Pacers of our league. He sniped Miles Turner from me in round one and sniped Fournier from me in one of the later, more recent rounds. So just know I got you on my list, Rohan. I know you're shaking your boots. All right, Tony, you got anything else before we start wrapping this thing up?
No, I mean, that's it. I think that we've got clearly a lot of guys who are really savvy, and it's a really good league. I'm definitely, you know, for those people listening, you know, definitely keep coming back, because we'll be giving up updates on these teams, and it's going to be really interesting, because this 30 team league, they're becoming more popular, and there's a lot to learn even in smaller leagues for how people maneuver.
For sure. And if anybody ever has any questions about 30 team leagues or just any questions in general, obviously you can find us on Twitter, and we're always down for that basketball conversation. Lastly, I wanted to give a shout out to the Toronto Raptors of our league, Ty. I think I mentioned that earlier. We made a couple of trades together, I think, and if it weren't for him, I wouldn't have been able to trade up for Grant Williams. I like Ty's young squad so far. He's taken a few rookies I like a lot. Brandon Clark is obviously ranked number 3 on my prospect rankings. He also snagged Matisse Thybul and managed to get Daniel Gafford real late at like pick 215 or something. So great value for a player like Gafford. All right, I'd say it's about time to close it out then. Remember to visit us at thefantasyunicorns.com as the season draws closer. There you can check out some articles and prospect rankings, and also check out our merchandise shop. I have a few t-shirts myself and a mug, and I'll probably pick up a sweater when it gets a bit cooler outside. But we should have our rankings. Our rankings should be coming up on the site sometime soon. Be sure to catch me on Twitter at FantasyNBALayup, and you can catch Tony, a.k.a. Swoop, on Twitter at...
Who's_your_papa. Yeah.
All right. We're always available. It is. It is quite the good one.
I love a pun.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Well, actually, here's a fun little way to end up the episode. I picked my fantasy football team today, and I need to send it over to you. Well, we had the draft over the weekend. I need to send my roster to you to get your take on it, because you know way more about fantasy football than I do. But I picked my team today, and I picked Julio Jones as the first pick. Obviously, I'm an Atlanta fan, so, you know, had to get Julio.
Sure.
But he was also the right pick. Should have
got Michael Thomas, but, you know.
Oh, anyway. God, no. I don't have a single Saints player on my team, just so you know. And I had the opportunity to take them, and I didn't because I couldn't do it. Anyway. But I named my team I Pity the Julio Jones. But I also had a choice between take him to Schoolio Jones,
or
wipe off the drool. So, you know,
you do enjoy a good Twitter pun.
Hit me up on Twitter if you have a strength. I'll change my team name depending on which one's the most popular. But yeah, goodness. I love a good pun.
Lord, all right, we need to get out of here. all right, well, until next time, Fantasy Fiends. We'll catch you later.